Good afternoon. This is KC Counts. Originally, we were scheduled to have Las Cruces Public Schools Superintendent Ralph Ramos on the show with us today, but a scheduling conflict revealed itself at the last minute, so we'll have to reschedule with Superintendent Ramos for another time. We would like to say thank you to Las Cruces Public School Board President Ray Jaramillo for joining us this afternoon at the last minute. Certainly a lot to discuss. Looking back at the last school year, the decision not to extend the school calendar, and what we can expect for the upcoming school year in the fall. Ray Jaramillo joins us next, and your questions are welcome at 575-646-2212 for Voice of the Public. We'll start right after NPR News on KRWG Public Media. It's 106. Good afternoon, and welcome to Voice of the Public on KRWG Public Media. This is KC Counts, and we had originally scheduled interim superintendent at the beginning of the week, and then the Las Cruces Public School Board chose Ralph Ramos as its superintendent moving forward, but a last-minute scheduling conflict revealed itself this morning, and so I really can't say thank you enough to Las Cruces Public School Board President Ray Jaramillo for jumping in at the last minute. Hi, Ray. Thank you for being here today.
Hi, Casey. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, we're so glad to have you. And 575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call. Off air, I was saying how pleased I was with how the timing all worked out to have the superintendent on with us today to talk about his appointment this week into the role on a permanent basis. But of course, we can talk to you about that and the board's decision this week. And of course, there's a lot to discuss. So let's begin with your choice of Ralph Ramos to fill that role.
Sure. You know, first off, I have to say, you know, knowing Ralph, I'm sure that he would love to do this. He's a very interesting guy, and he would be great on a future show. But as far as the decision for Ralph, you know, he had all the qualities that were laid out and all the qualities that we were looking for in our next superintendent. He had the experience, and he had the, you know, some of the stuff that the superintendent search committee wanted, someone local, someone that knew our community, had been a principal, and he kept checking off all of those requirements. And, you know, I have to say that I was very pleased with not only our finalists, with Dr. Rico and Mr. Ramos, but really everyone that applied. Las Cruces Public Schools and our board really had a lot of choice, and it was nice. It was nice.
What about when Mr. Ramos took over under the circumstances that he did? Tell us about moving forward from the tragic loss of Dr. Trujillo.
You know, Casey, Dr. Trujillo and I, our relationship, you know, was started a long time ago before she was superintendent. So Dr. Trujillo has always been dear and to my heart. And not only was she a friend, but she was my neighbor. She lived right across the, you know, right down the street from me. And I used to see her every day walking her dogs, and I knew her family, and I knew her children. Our children knew each other. And so I was, you know, very close to Dr. Trujillo, not only at a school board member and superintendent relationship, but as a friend. And so, you know, when I was there, I happened to be there the day, you know, that she was the tragic accident. And, you know, and her husband came to my door, and I went to go help them and support them. And, you know, the shock of everything was tremendous. And I know that that many of our people in our district were really struggling with the loss of not only our superintendent, but our friend, community member. And it was difficult. And so, you know, when we tapped on Ralph's shoulder to step up, I think it was, you know, a great choice. He was, you know, he at that point, he was not in, you know, in at the superintendent's you know, in the superintendent's office and not at central office is what I wanted to say. But and I think that he came in and provided the stability to allow those that were most that were close to her the time that they needed to grieve. And it was an important process because we were doing we needed somebody that had some experience and because, you know, life didn't stop after Dr. Trujillo's. We had some very difficult decisions regarding, you know, what was happening within the school district. And I couldn't be more proud of Mr. Ramos and how he handled that. And there was a lot of pressure on him to do so.
575-646-2212, the telephone number to call. And Dan is on the line. Good afternoon, Dan. Thanks for calling Voice of the Public. Welcome to the program.
Hello. I wish to thank Mr. Jaramillo and his associates on the board and everyone involved in education in Las Cruces. It's a very challenging role. I'm part of a small group of authorized volunteers that provide supplementary resources to the district. And I've been in several schools and also, you know, eaten in the cafeteria with the students and so forth. So I had a couple of thoughts to share. One of them is that somehow the structure of the school day creates a problem in the period allotted to the cafeteria and also the playground. Usually it's a very short period of time. It's somewhere between 30 and 45 minutes, and the problem being that by the time you muster students into lines and they go through the line in the cafeteria, sit down, they hardly have any time to eat, and then the limited time for recess comes up, and it leads to some really difficult problems for the students to try to get some nutrition, and it also leads to an awful lot of food waste. And the staff of these cafeterias, they put out, you know, pretty good basic food, and then they have you know, a selection of salads and that, but some of that is never touched because mm-hmm. the students just don't have time. And then you have this kind of a mess every morning and every evening because all the students are come into the school at the same time, all the grades, and then they leave at the same time. So you have a kind of a dangerous, what the British would call a scrum at both ends of the school day, you know, as everyone shows up at the same time. So my question is, how about let's restructure the school day so that they have more time to eat properly, and also the time of arrival and departure could be staggered in some way. And I realize that's challenging because you have some families with several students at the school in different grades. But it seems like we should be able to work something out a little better than the existing schedule that we have.
Dan, thank you for the call. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. Mr. Jaramillo, any thoughts to share with us along those lines in terms of longer lunch hours is what I'm hearing here, which we can all get behind, yes. Dan.
Yeah, you know, good. Yeah.
Well, you know, I have to say, first off, I just want to tell Dan, thank you for what he does. Anytime that we have volunteers like that in our school district, we don't get a chance often enough to thank him. And so, you know, there's a couple of things that Dan said that I think are very important. And Dan, I'm not going to ask you your age online, but I'll share mine a little bit. But our schools look very similar, you know, from 40 years ago when I was in elementary school to today. And I think that when you talk about school structure, and our day looks very similar to the way it did 40 years ago. And I think one of the things that I can say is that, you know, one of the good things from COVID is that we've been forced to rethink how that school day might look. and how education can be delivered. And so you brought up a couple of great things, like, you know, our cafeteria and eating. And my child was an elementary, you know, both my children were elementary students not too long ago, and I had those same concerns. Food waste and the amount of time that they were eating and the amount of time that children play. I'm a big advocate for play, especially in those early years. And so anytime we can get children playing more is something that I would support. Now, you know, one of the things I said about COVID is that we had to reimagine how school is delivered. And one of the things I implore our not only here in our district, but even at the state level with the public education department, is that we reevaluate how education is delivered. We saw that we can do things a little differently. And, you know, as far as the, you know, staggering the times and the days, I've done that at my school. I'm the director at Alpha School. And our parking lot, I realized that our parking lot was too jam-packed at 8 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, we have our 4-year-old start at 8 o'clock and our 3-year-olds at 8:30. And it really it allows for that, some of those things that you were saying, that those traffic congestions and things like that. But, you know, Dan, I think you brought up some great points, and I think that it's on our radar. And I think that now more than ever, we really need to reimagine how that school day and I know we'll talk about the calendar at some point, how these things might need to be adjusted for children, you know, in the 21st century.
575-646-2212 is the telephone number to call. If you have a question for Las Cruces Public Schools Board President Ray Jaramillo, who joined us today in the place of Superintendent Ralph Ramos, who had a last-minute scheduling conflict. So we will work on rescheduling the superintendent to come back with us another time. But in the meantime, something that happened just yesterday, Board member Terry Dahlman resigned, and Mr. Jaramillo, you talked to some reporters about it and said that there were some allegations that warrant an outside investigation. What can you tell us about that and moving forward?
So first off, I wish Ms. Dahlman well, and I received her resignation yesterday and was able to read it. You know, one of the things that I have to say is that, you know, she was we're all volunteers. We're elected officials, but we're volunteers. And what she's given up the last 4 years is you know, a lot. Unless you're in the school board, unless you're an elected official, you might not have that understanding of what she's given to our community. And she has, and she actually was board president during one of the most difficult times that any of us could ever remember, and going through COVID, which was in 2020. And so for that, I want to thank her in there. But as I read her resignation letter, there was some harsh words that were in there, and I think that it warrants an outside investigation. And so we need to look into that. There was some, you know, I dissected it a lot and I reflected. And that was when I asked for a special meeting to happen on Monday, where we can talk about in open meeting. It'll be available to the public and they can be in the boardroom or they can watch it online. But you know, want to ask the board, and we want to discuss, you know, how we go about, replacing that position and fulfilling that position. And then I would like to also ask the board for consideration into an outside investigation and into some of these allegations.
So that meeting is happening on Monday. And, you know, you mentioned the difficulty being on a board, and that was something I wanted to touch on today, but the importance of that board. And in every community, if school board elections are held independently of other elections, turnout is incredibly low. Let's talk a little bit about what local residents should know about electing, the importance of showing up to elect representation on their local school boards.
Well, Casey, elections are important no matter what. I'm a little biased, but I think, you know, the election on a school board where it has anything to do with children is even more important. And You know, our students are far most the most important in my aspect is of our community. And so I think that, you know, what the legislature did by moving the school board into the November election is going to increase the amount of participation that's going to happen there. And I think that we'll get a better participation, a better vote turnout in November. So I'm excited for the public. And, you know, I've always, over the last 4 years, I've been excited that our public is really, they're really invested in school, in the schools, in the school board. I get a lot of emails, I get a lot of phone calls, and a lot of people like to come in and provide public input, which is a valuable component for us to do our work.
There has been a lot of public input over the course of the last year or so on a few different issues. And, of course, one of those being in-person or remote learning. And the school board decided recently, among the difficult decisions, no doubt, that you were referring to, not to extend the school calendar. And I'd like for you to talk a little bit about that decision and what that meant in terms of funding that went with it.
So Casey, that is a loaded question that has multi layers involved in that. And, you know, so I'll try to break it down a little bit. And, you know, one of the things was, you know, that, you know, a lot of that, those decisions were made up in Santa Fe at the legislature and with the public education department. And in, you know, there were some unintentional consequences of, you know, the mandate, I'll call it, of, requiring extended learning or extending the calendar and requiring that all students participate. As you may know or may not, you know, before we were able to do this and it would be based on, you know, the need and would be based on parents that chose to do that. And that wasn't the case this year. And, you know, they notified, you know, our local districts and local districts across the state, but we really didn't have a lot of time to advocate for this. We didn't have a lot of time. And so, you know, we're coming off an unprecedented year where, you know, not only were we tired physically, but emotionally, there was a lot of things. We lost lives in our community, our educators, and I'll say educators, I mean teachers, but there were so many, like our food service workers, all of these people are people in the office that gave up their lives to make sure that that children were being fed during this COVID-19. You know, those that cleaned our buildings, that showed up every single day, our parents that had to work and also be the teacher at home and to support. And so our community really spoke out and said, you know what, we just need a little bit of time. I think that if we would have been able to do what we've normally done and offered it to those families that wanted it and those teachers that wanted it and shot for, you know, maybe sometime in the future next year, I think we would have had a little bit more success. But, you know, it was very important that we listen to not only the teachers, but those we call classified staff that, you know, many of them, you know, gave up their lives to make sure that the children had the necessary tools to be successful during a remote or a remote type or hybrid type learning. And I thought it was important to make sure that we valued their, you know, that we valued their opinions and we listened to what they were saying, because it was a tough year. And I stand by my vote on that to not extend. And, you know, obviously we weren't the only school district in New Mexico to do that. And, you know, I think that sends a message to the public education department that says that, you know, we really are and we really should have local control over that and not fake local control, you know, where they say, you know, you can decide this, but if you don't do it our way, you don't get the money or you don't get the funding to be able to do this. And so I call that fake local control. But I wish that and I look forward to collaborating with the public education department to be able to move forward in programs such as this. And, you know, and like, you know, Dan said, we need to reevaluate how we deliver education, and we need to reevaluate on, you know, maybe it's time to do more of a year-round type thing. I would love to put that out and see, you know, but the community really needs to get behind that, because we can't be, you know, the school district can't say we're going to do full year-round schooling, and then our businesses and the NMSU and all these other stakeholders, we all have to do things like this. We all have to make those kind of decisions together.
575-646-2212, the telephone number to call if you have a question for Las Cruces Public School Board President Ray Jaramillo. It is 125. So let's look back to when the time came for schools to start offering more in-person learning opportunities. Tell us about the process of getting there, and looking back now, how successful was it?
You know, I, you know, when you talk about the in-person opportunities, that, you know, that was Dr. Karen Trujillo's word. And I remember speaking to her on the phone, you know, many times late at night, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night, or she would stop by my front yard with her two dogs. And she was, and I always teased her, because I said, who's walking who? They seem to be walking her sometimes. But, you know, the word, the key word there was opportunities. And to advocate, and that was one of the biggest things that Dr. Trujillo did, is she advocated for in-person opportunities. And that, what that meant to me was that to give children, those children that were struggling, those children that were that may not have had the necessary tools that everyone else had to be successful in a remote type of learning, the opportunity to be able to come in small groups and really try to get back online. And that's really what she wanted. It wasn't about doing one thing or the over, one thing or the other, but it was really about providing opportunities to meet the needs of children across the spectrum. Some children were doing great on remote learning, but she really called, and that was one of the things that she said. It was her idea to say that she wanted to increase in-person opportunities, and that was Dr. Trujillo's word.
So moving forward from that decision and creating those opportunities, I know initially plans were to go from the youngest kids on up, and then at some point it kind of flip-flopped there, and we started actually with the older kids, and moving forward. And of course there were a couple of unsanctioned off-campus events that maybe threw a wrench into district plans. But overall, it doesn't seem to have been a terrible disruptor. Is looking back, is can you say it was a success?
Absolutely. And you know, one of the other things that I think that it's important for the public to know is the separation between the school board and the superintendent and the administration. And there's things that the school board can and cannot do as far as you know, making those decisions. And you know, one of the things that Dr. Trujillo was absolutely fantastic about was really relying on her experts and those in her cabinet, and coming together to make the most important decisions based on what was good for children. And she did that. And I know that Mr. Ramos going forward has those same qualities. He brings the people in, he utilizes the people around him, and he makes the decisions based on what is good for children. And so if looking back now in this short amount of time, you know, what Dr. Trujillo set out to do and what our district set out to do, we were very successful in doing that. You know, we kept children safe. We delivered education in ways that we have never done before, using, you know, Mr. Silver and his expertise in delivering, you know, education through a virtual way. And we've learned a lot from it. And so we had to take those first steps. And sometimes those first steps are often the hardest. And Dr. Trujillo, you know, Mr. Ramos, are not afraid to take those first steps and then reflect and then get better at it.
And ultimately, the school year culminated in some in-person graduation ceremonies. What did that feel like?
Well, for me, I have to tell you, it was bittersweet in the fact that, you know, my son did not get to graduate last year. And although not in a traditional way, I have to thank the district for going above and beyond, for doing what they could do back then. It was something that was that they had to, you know, to create. And that drive-through graduation, you know, my son was one of thousands of children that didn't get to graduate. So when I had my regalia on and looking out and seeing the parents smile, I wish that I would have been able to share that with my son last year. But I also, at the same time, was so excited that these parents got to sit up there in their stands, watch their children, hear their children's names, hear the sounds of graduations, and the applause. And it was absolutely fantastic to be able to hand some of my, former preschool students. Not only was I able to give my preschool students their preschool diploma, but I was able to hand many of them their high school diploma, which was probably the best thing that I've ever been able to do as a school board member, was to be able to see that and take just, you know, 2 or 3 seconds to say thank you and to say that I was proud of them. And so those in-person graduations were absolutely phenomenal. The administration did an absolutely great job of making sure that people were safe, adhering to the regulations that we, and the guidelines, the COVID safe practices, and then giving students really that end result of feeling that they, the accomplishment that they've done and the throwing up of the caps. That was awesome.
Now, moving forward, we know that a lot of kids missed out on a lot of learning. And at some point, we don't know how long really that it might take for those kids to get caught up. Tell me about the discussions moving forward on how to identify those children and what opportunities there will be to address those needs.
I think first and foremost, we have to acknowledge that, you know, yes, you know, for many children, you know, we learning was different, and we need to take that into account. But, you know, children often learn despite us and not necessarily because of us. They are always learning. Young children are always learning. Older children are always learning. It just may be learning not in the way that we had imagined. Like Dan said, the structure of learning is going to be a little different. And I think we need to acknowledge that these children were learning how to be safe, how to protect their families, how to really, disciplined in getting on Zoom. So there was a lot of things that are going to translate into good humans when they get older. Yes, you know, there's going to be some number things, some algebra things, and some science things, and some history things, and, you know, those types of things. But, you know, we can't look at those things as being every, there was the social and emotional things that these children went through over the last year are going to be vital and make a huge impact when they are in the workforce or in their relationships that they go forward. So, and as far as identifying these children, I think that, you know, that we're going to have to reevaluate how we do that. And I trust that we have the people in place and the district will have the people in place to make sure that we meet the needs of all children, and that we meet the needs of them, not only in academics, but social and emotionally. And so I just think that we, you know, as we get back, we just kind of need to, you know, not so much focus on the learning loss, but really just focus on the child and getting to know that child and meeting the needs of that child. And I think a lot of that happens when we reevaluate how education is done and how children learn and meeting all of their needs as a whole child. And I think that we're moving in that direction.
You mentioned social and emotional needs. There's no question that for kids who are 6 or 7 years old, having this last year and quarter be what it was would have a huge impact on them socially and emotionally. What kind of discussions are there about, you know, ramping up those efforts through our schools to care for kids emotionally through their counselors or what have you?
Yeah. So first off, I'm a big advocate for more counselors. We need those people that that are specialized in that, and we need them at all levels and in all schools. Just like nurses, and they could provide not only the professional development for us to be able to identify these children that need and their needs, but I think it's just good practice to make sure that we're meeting the needs of all of the, you know, children can't learn if they are their basic needs are not met. And so, you know, we can talk about algebra and this and that, but you know what, if children's basic needs are not met, then it's a hard time to go forward. So, you know, but our district is one of the best. We have, and I, you know, our those counselors and that program, I was able to, I nominated them. They won an award recently, and I was able to give that award to them for the work that they had done during the COVID 19 pandemic, not only for our students, but even for our staff. We lost staff last year, and they were there providing that social and emotional support. So in turn, they could provide that for their children. And that goes a long way in education. Education is so big that we always focus on the academic part. And oh, don't get me wrong, the academic part is so vital. But we really need to just realize that there are so many components to the educational piece.
It is 1:36, and this is Voice of the Public. Casey Counts here with you. And I'm joined today by Las Cruces Public Schools Board President Ray Jaramillo, who jumped in when a scheduling conflict kept Superintendent Ralph Ramos from joining us today. So we'll reschedule with Mr. Ramos for another time. In the meantime, if you have a question for Mr. Jaramillo, 575-646-2212 is the number to call. And you mentioned those foundational needs, and as the director of Alpha School and working with children in that age group, I'd like to get your thoughts on the new Department of Early Childhood Education and Care, and what kind of start is it off to, and what are your hopes for it?
Well, that's a great question, Casey. I'm a big advocate of early childhood education, and you know, we talk about, you know, graduation rates, we talk about reading in third grade, you know, these key things that we look at in education. And I always tell people, if we want to see the data results, and we want to, if we want to really target those things, we really need to focus on early childhood education and giving children the necessary tools for them to be successful. And, you know, this New Mexico worked for many, many years, and I worked with many colleagues across the state to advocate for this department. And I have to say, Secretary Gruginski is absolutely phenomenal. She understands children. She understands a developmentally appropriate practice. She understands the importance of relationships. And to see that that department with the secretary and all the people that are in there that really, truly understand how important and early childhood education is to not only the success of them in school, but really the success in life. And so I'm so excited to work with the department not only with the New Mexico pre-K, but with infants and toddlers. I'm excited to see where this goes forward.
Can I ask you what you think are some really key things that the department has to get right in order to see some success foundationally here in the beginning, say the first couple of years?
So obviously when we talk about some of those things, it's funding. Funding has to be established so we can offer the opportunities. You know, that's Dr. Trujillo's word again, the opportunities and access. It does no good if children in our community don't have access to high quality early childhood education. And that's the key component is that we need to make sure that children are experiencing high quality early childhood experiences based on developmentally appropriate practice and based on relationships. And so one of the things that I think that the department must do is make sure that we provide access. And one of the things that we've had trouble with in the last year was the closure of many childcare centers across the state. And so families, as families start to get going back to work, That we need to make sure that we have access to those children, not only for childcare needs, but also for the needs of them, of the child, socially, emotionally, educationally, and those experiences are going to provide lifelong data and to really be successful in life.
It is 1:40, and 575-646-2212 is the telephone number. We have Rob on the line. Good afternoon, Rob. Thanks for calling Voice of the Public. How are you?
I'm doing just fine.
Good. What's on your mind?
I'm a real firm believer in school choice, and I just want to know where they stand on actual charter schools that are actually managed by a separate school board, and giving us more choice in education, which creates competition within education. This model is being implemented in San Antonio, Texas, with great success. I was just wondering what Mr. Jaramillo's position is on that.
All right, Rob, thanks for the question.
So I think, Rob, your question is one of many that a lot of people have on that. And, you know, For the most part, I believe that that the public education, I strongly believe in public education. I strongly believe that that we can provide students with the necessary tools to be successful in education and in life, whatever they choose to do. But, you know, I understand also that it's not for everyone. And why? And I think that one of the things that public schools needs to reflect on is why. That maybe some families feel that they may not be getting what they need. And I think it goes back to, I think Dan was the first caller, and he talked about the tradition, you know, the cafeteria, the same traditional thing that the school looks like. And I said, you know, from 40 years ago, school looks very similar to the way it did 40 years ago. And we are delivering education the same way we've been delivering it for 40 years ago. And I think, Rob, to answer your question about school choices, that I think that, you know, our public education department, our school districts need to reevaluate how we're doing that and really ask our questions, ask those tough questions of ourselves and really reflect. Why do some families feel like that they need to do this? And how can we meet the needs of all children? Not the majority of children, but all children. And I think when we answer those questions, we can reevaluate and restructure the way public schools looks and how we deliver education. And that could be virtually. Well, you know, we only had a small population being able to do that. Maybe it's through virtually. Maybe it's through technology. Maybe it's reevaluating those pickup times. Maybe it's reevaluating what the cafeteria, how children and making it a more social environment where they have the time to eat. Maybe it's a little bit about extending the calendar. Maybe it's about really supporting teachers in the role that they do and really make sure that they're getting paid like the professionals they are. And I think, like I said, that's a complex question. I believe in our public schools, but I also believe that we need to do things a little bit differently going forward and really reflect on that. And so I would like to see our teachers being paid as the, and that could change a lot of different things. I would like to see lower teacher to child ratios. That's one thing that the, you know, when charter schools have, they have lower, and we know that the data shows that that's an effect, impactful way to really reach students is by lowering class sizes. And so how do we do that? We have to reimagine our public schools. And I think that, you know, through this COVID-19 pandemic, it's really highlighted some of the things that we've done really well, but it's also highlighted some things that we need to work on. And I'm excited to work with our school district. So hopefully in the future, be able to go forward and reevaluate what education looks like, not only in Las Cruces Public Schools, but across New Mexico.
What is the school choice situation for parents, whether that is within Las Cruces Public Schools? And let's talk a little bit about what the charter school situation is here currently versus maybe how it's operating in other places. Rob did mention San Antonio, and I don't have a familiarity with necessarily how they're doing things there. But just let's talk a little bit about how that's looking here for now.
Yeah, and I think that, I'm not familiar with San Antonio as well. And, I think that, New Mexico has always had that, the public charter schools available to families and those that are those families that choose to do that. And I think that that's an important factor or important part of the whole process. But I think that, whether it be charter schools, whether it be public schools, I think that, as long as we are focusing on what is good for children, then children benefit from these things and their experiences within, whatever walls that they are in find. We have to support our teachers. We have to get good people in there. A lot of people are leaving this profession for many reasons, and we really need to just reevaluate that and make sure that we're giving the respect, and that oftentimes comes with the salary of our teachers and our certified staff. Our certified staff, nothing can our bus drivers, our the people that work in the office, I think we really need to support them. And when we can do some of those things, then, lower teacher to child ratios, teacher to student ratio happens, and more individualized learning can happen. And that's really what people are moving to school choice. They want that individualized learning. And how can we provide that to them? But we need, the public education department leaders. We need our legislators to really, really reevaluate what we see public education looking like, not next year, but really 10 years from now, and we really need to start laying the foundation for that.
One of the concerns that one hears when discussing this topic is that as, resources move into charter schools and are pulled away from public schools under that scenario, that you have this divide. And we have schools with kids that whose families still don't feel like they have much of a choice and who still end up in those places. And we have that risk of that population of students that are then left out of the process.
Well, our country seems to be divided on a lot of things. I think that, we really need to look and bring people from both sides of not only the political aisle, but parents that we really need to listen to say, those parents that say, my child is not getting what they need. And we need to listen to, and we need to come together because everyone that is talking on this has a valuable point. And if we can bring the consensus to the table to actually have some civilized conversations and really get people to work together, children are not in red or blue. Children are children, and we often, as adults, make things very complicated with bringing in a political aspect to this. And I see that as somebody that has been in the political world, I see that and I understand that. But how do we bring these people together to really meet the necessary needs of the families that feel that public education is not the way to go? I strongly believe that public education, given the right tools, can do the job that most parents would want to see with their child. And that's really the necessary tools, both academic, socially, and emotionally, to be successful humans, to make sure that the door doesn't slam on someone behind there, to be able to ask questions, and to be able to go and learn how to learn. If we can give those children, it's not about learning, it's not about, understanding this one math problem, but it's really understanding problem solving. It's really understanding, who can I go to ask these questions? And then the biggest thing that we can give children is the opportunity to be able to reflect and to grow on their wrong answers. We always focus on the right answers, always the right answers, but oftentimes, as adults, and we can, and I know you might agree with me, Casey, is that we learn from our mistakes. And sometimes that as we reflect, we can grow just as much from our wrong answers as we can from our right answers.
And Rob, you're here with us again, or maybe still. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. What was on your mind?
I think there's some clarification needs to happen on the difference between the regular school board and public charter school board. So when a public charter school that's overseen by a separate school board, the principal has the ability, or the manager of the school, the ability to create learning teams. He doesn't have teachers come in and placed by the local district. And so they create actually educational teams that work together. I'm highly experienced in this. And so I just want to know why you're not bringing up, you keep going back to public schools, and charters are public schools. They're funded with public money, and they're teaching kids for less than the regular public system is. Could you please comment on this?
Before I let him do that, you said you're quite experienced in it. Would you share a little bit about your background and your experience?
Yes, I'm highly read up on the subject. I have three grandchildren in one of the top charter schools. It's three full campuses in impoverished area of El Cajon, California. That's extremely successful for 20 years now.
Okay, so your grandchildren are there, and I thought you meant professionally, but I wanted to clarify that. Thanks, Wayne. And Ray, I'll let you follow up.
Yeah, so I don't have my background is really not in what Rob is referring to. So I don't know much about it. I know that those private and I think what he said was the private charter schools that have their own school boards, and so I would imagine that they function.
I'm sorry about that. That was my.
I would imagine that they function very similar to way are, but with probably within a smaller group. And so they're able to make their own. They don't have a public education department that that may be overseeing them. So they probably have a little bit more flexibility. And so for whatever reason, Rob's grandchildren and their parents have chosen to pick that but what my question would be is like, why not the public school in your district, and why is that? And maybe and not to say that they have to come back, but really maybe we can learn from that and say, you know what, I really like this charter school because the low they say they're doing it for less money. Why? I want to know how they're doing some of those things, how they're able to do that. And I think that we can learn a lot from that. And through that reflection, we can make public schools even better than we have in the past. But, there's always a room for there's always room for those kind of things. And sometimes children need, specific school, and if it meeting the need of that school, then I'm happy that child is getting what they need.
All right. Well, let's go to Wayne, and I may have, if I called you Wayne, my apologies. He was our next caller waiting with a question. Good afternoon, Wayne. Thank you for calling Voice of the Public. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Go ahead.
So I have a question. I am Wayne Huber, and I've taught in Las Cruces High School, a number of the elementary schools here, because art teachers up, skip, and jump. We sometimes have three schools in 2 weeks and 1,000 kids. It's quite an experience. But I also taught in a charter school here in town, so that's why I kind of decided to chime in when you were talking about charter schools. Because the charter school, I won't mention names, but it was a non-union school here. And I must admit that I had such a positive experience with union support in Las Cruces Public Schools, and also an incredible supervisor of the art, music, and theater program K-12 was John Schutz. Have you ever heard of John Schutz, either one of you?
Well, our engineer Mark is nodding his head yes, and two thumbs up.
Yeah, John Schutz was awesome, and he's retired now, but he was amazing in his role. So I've been very blessed to be part of Las Cruces Public Schools, and I also want to focus, and maybe you could talk a little bit more about the union relationship between the school board and the unions.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, Wayne. I appreciate it. And before I kind of just jump in there, I just want to say thank you for what you've done with the public schools and going into different schools. You know, the unions, I have to say, are an important stakeholder in what they do, and they are part of our school district. I have many people that, you know, whatever lens they grew up with, either are for unions or maybe against unions. But regardless of how your lens and how you view your lenses, the unions really do support our school district, and they are a part of our school district and are our big stakeholder. And so in decision, in things that we have to, you know, in making decisions, and they represent both the classified and our certified staff and make sure that they have the necessary tools that they need to be successful. And so one of the things, you know, it was important for me in our superintendent search recently to make sure that both unions, both classified staff and our certified staff had a spot on that committee, and they were able to establish some of their questions, and I was able to listen to those questions and listen to those answers from our finalists, which helped deliver or help create a tool that we were able to use in picking our next superintendent. So union support, I'm a big proponent of our union, and I think that they do a wonderful job, and I also say that I enjoy working with them. But I hope that answers his question.
Well, we just have a few minutes left, and I know you separated kind of the job of the board versus the administration in terms of kind of what the classroom situation looks like through the course of a pandemic. But spend a little time here talking about what you expect to see in the fall when we return.
So that's a loaded question as well, Casey. I have to say that, you know, one of the my biggest priority was to as me personally, but as I would hope as a board, was to establish a leader and give that person enough time to establish some relationships going forward, to be able to set our both our classified staff, our teachers, And then to set up the environment in a way that that is going to be safe and is going to deliver the highest quality of education that we can in Las Cruces Public Schools. And so what I expect to see is a lot of people working. I expect to see a lot of people collaborating. I already know that these people put children first. So I'm excited to see what comes out of it. That is not a school board role. But being able to evaluate the superintendent and being able to see how he does that is going to be an important part of this process. I'm excited to give that Ralph has the opportunity to bring his team together and to create an environment is probably the most important school year that any of us can ever remember, coming out of something that we've never, you know, this COVID pandemic has been stressful on everyone. So I want to see some happy teachers, happy educators, and I want to see some happy children, and I really want to see some happy parents. Once we can get going with that, then I think that my role and as a school board, then we would have accomplished what we needed to do.
Not only are you an educator, Ray, you're also a student still pursuing your doctorate, and also a children's book author. I got a glimpse of the cover of your book just before we went on the air. Tell us about your inspiration for Gust, Gust, Gust.
Well, I tell you, it started off as an assignment in my master's degree program, was to write a STEM book. And so I chose to write a book on a child and his tata. The tata resembles my tata, and the little boy resembles me as a little boy. But basically, it's a story about how the wind, and this journey of how he navigates his fear of the wind with its necessity to supply electricity and water to the village. And so Gust is short for Gustavo, and they go from being villains to heroes. And so this is my book, and I'm excited to share it and to read it with children. And I just brought in a lot of my experiences. I did have a child when he was was young, that was afraid of the wind. That was my inspiration for that. But really, this book would have just sat on my shelf, but I read it to a few children, and there was a few children that kept asking me to read it every single day. And so after a couple of years, we decided, my wife pushed me, and we decided to push that book out. So I'm excited to that many families across wherever are sending me pictures of them sitting on the couch in their pajamas reading a story. And that really is something that I've never felt. And an emotion that is truly heartwarming. It's something that and I love children's literature. So to be able for families to read my book has been special.
Are there more stories in the process or coming soon from you? Do you think this is going to be just a first?
So people have asked me that, and so a couple of things. So one, I may be in collaboration with another colleague of mine to write another children's book. But I also have a second part to this book that is in my head right now. And
well,
so
we'll have to talk about that another time. I've let us run out of time here. Sure. Las Cruces Public School Board President Ray Jaramillo, thank you so much for agreeing to be with us today at the very last minute, just a little bit earlier. So we really appreciate your time, and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you, Casey. I appreciate it.
And it's almost 2:01. NPR News is coming up, and then Leora Zeitlin has Intermezzo by request on KRWG Public Media. Thank you for being with us.